is Hockey Central with Jeff Merrick, Anthony Stewart, and Justin Bourne on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
So, Stewie, between you and me, not this morning. Our boy's on twice this week for television. Oh, in the studio moments ago to our producer, Matt Marchese. You turn temperature down a little bit, a little uncomfortable.
Showtime, man. Eh? Bobby Big Wheels, he's we used changed. To call him a junior. The game's changed.
Yeah. Doesn't take long. Anything right around here.
Man, Borny, when I met you how many years ago? Like, you're, oh, yeah, whatever, guy, we're all good.
That would be my biggest nightmare, to actually be someone that was really difficult. So if that happens, please. Yes.
Just throw you over the top ropes?
Please do.
Welcome to Hockey Central. Plenty of topics today. There's always no shortage after a weekend, but this was a particularly spicy one where we will talk about blowout losses. We will talk about general managers blown out. And we will try to answer this question. Who owes who a fight? We're having this conversation with Brian Burke before the show. Someone owes someone a fight, but we can't figure out who that is.
We're going to get an independent arbiter in a room?
Yeah. Well, I was saying to Burke, what this needs is an independent lawyer, which he is one.
Get Dana White. Get Dana White in the room.
Dana White.
This is what we're
going to
do. The undercard, we're going to have these two.
Yeah.
The main event, we're going to do.
That would be fine, but someone in the Battle of Alberta owes somebody a fight. We just all have a different idea of who owes who this fight. And we'll have this conversation in a little bit here on Hockey Central. Elliot Friedman's going to drop by here in about 25 minutes' time. We'll talk about the dismissal of Ray Shiro, general manager of the New Jersey Devils. Tom Fitzgerald takes over in an interim capacity. In the meantime, we'll kick it off with the Fast Five. And we'll start with the Maple Leafs getting blown out by the Florida Panthers. These two teams probably fighting for third in the Atlantic. That's going to be the battle here on in. Tampa and Boston will duke it out for the top spot. Jonathan Huberdeau leads the Panthers with a goal and a helper. He's been the top dog there all season. Leafs lose to Florida 8-4.
Yeah, Huberdeau with his 420th point, which, by the way, Florida Panthers all-time scoring leader had 419 points.
What's going on there?
That's like a few good seasons.
I think I was fifth, but...
So that caught me off guard a little bit. Huberdeau is now one of six active players who lead their team in career points, that being Ovechkin, Marleau, Koivu, Wheeler, and... William Karlsson in Las Vegas is the franchise leader in all-time points. So kind of a cool stat for Huberdeau. I'm sure we'll get more into the Leaf side of thing, a little bit more into the show. But good for Florida and Huberdeau for reaching that mark.
Apologies, by the way, if our microphones sound really tinny or if the audio right now on your personal device, on your radio, on your television sounds really echoey and hollowy. There's something wrong.
Blackberry problems.
I'm blaming JD Bunkus. He's at the end of some type of illness. He may have just infected
Patient
all
zero.
The microphones here, but we're trying to get it resolved.
Ew.
Meanwhile, you get the big story, Stewie. Ray Shiro.
Yes.
Out. Now, by the way, you've had, we should point out, a number of personalities go after you on Twitter for your takes, whether it's most recently Mike Modano. Whether it's Daniel Negreanu, who am I leaving out here?
Vander Kane.
Vander Kane.
My brother's throwing in the odd chirp via Instagram.
Chris goes after you, no problem there. So the last thing we want you to do is soften. If anything, your spine should be straighter and harder than ever before. So with that in mind, Anthony Stewart, the headline, Ray Shiro out. As general manager in New Jersey, double barrel. Here
I'm
going
to keep it vanilla here, but again, it's odd to have a midseason GM firing. I'm not sure how many times it's happened. And Ray Shiro's been there since 2015. He was a successor to Lou Lamoriello, so big expectations there. But he made a lot of bold moves over the 4 or 5 years that he was there. He traded for Subban. He got Gusev. He signed Simmons. He got the two first overall picks. Traded Taylor Hall. So. A lot of bold moves that didn't work out. With those moves, you'd expect that they would be a lot better than last place in the Metropolitan Division. So Ray Shiro, he's out with New Jersey now. Who's
it
coming?
Feels weird.
It does.
It caught everybody.
And again, because he's been around for a while now, and you think that he would have a little bit more time to do what he does. You saw what he's done in years past. So for me, I think it's just more of a changing of the guard. They want to get someone in now to come in and maybe blow the whole thing up now. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens at the trade deadline with some of these guys that are going to be UFAs coming up.
More on Ray Shiro with Elliot Friedman coming up towards the bottom of the hour. Meanwhile, Louis Domingue, speaking of the New Jersey Devils, beats his former team, snaps the Lightning's 10-game winning streak. How about the Devils' weekend, Borny?
Yeah. The Devils, also the Domingue thing is weird because, like, do the Devils want to win right now? Like, at this point, are wins good? It's tough to, I know.
You want to pause on that because that's an interesting, because general managers at a certain point want the team to lose because at a certain point you want the best lottery odds. I don't think players ever think that. Now, some players have, you know, will quit on the season, soften up. I understand that, but I don't believe that when a player gets on the ice, he is actively saying, I really want to lose this game for the pick.
Yeah. Well, and obviously for Louis Domingue himself, this was an incredible win, right? Like, Tampa Bay really threw him by the wayside. He was pretty good for them last season. Went into this offseason, things were fine. Then he got a phone call. They were like, hey, we signed Curtis McIlhenny. He was like, so what should I do? And they brought him to camp and, like, secluded him away from the team. Like, nothing changed in his performance, and he just kind of got thrown aside. And the reality is, sometimes the team just likes another goalie more than they like you or another player, and that was it. So unfortunate for him the way his season started. So good to see him kind of gain some traction there in New Jersey.
Let me pause on that because you've written before they are, for you, the most fun bad team to watch.
Yeah. And that remains. That remains. It part of that is because it feels like a group of individuals to me. Like, P.K. Subban is an interesting personality. Nikita Gusev is his own entity. Mm-hmm. The Taylor Hall saga was its own thing. Like, at every position for me, it just seemed like there was no cohesion, but a lot of people I was interested in watching, and that leads to a lot of goals for, goals against, mistakes, losses, but they're an interesting drama to watch.
Cal Palmieri, one of the more intriguing players that nobody talks about.
Just kind of leads his team in scoring, and then everyone's like, who's that again?
What? Who's that?
Nick Palmieri?
No. Bo Horvat, meanwhile, Stewie, this one for you helps with a pair. The Canucks get past the Minnesota Wild.
Yeah, scores his 14th and 15th goal of the season as Vancouver defeats Minnesota 4-1. It's a tight dogfight now in that Pacific Division where Vancouver's now tied for third. And it's 2 points separating five teams in Calgary, Vegas, Arizona, and Vancouver. So it's a real tight race there where, you know, one weekend you can be first. The next weekend you can end up probably, you know, fifth place.
Let's stay with the Pacific. We'll get to the Maple Leafs and the Florida Panthers here in a second. But Saturday was rock and roll. Saturday was BOA all over again. Legit. And it's amazing what happens when there's physical contact and reactions to it. Matthew Tkachuk with the two body checks on Zach Cassian. Cassian goes banana sandwich and grabs him and beats him down to the ground. There will be a hearing today for Zach Cassian. Now, a couple of comparables to keep in mind as we throw darts at what type of suspension Zach Cassian will get. Darnell Nurse got 3 for the attack on Roman Polak. Before that, Matt Karkner, when he was with the Ottawa Senators, and Brian Boyle, when he was with the Rangers, a similar attack, and that was 1, if memory serves. So are we expecting somewhere between that range, or dare we say there might be more?
I don't think you can look at that situation if you're the Department of Player Safety and say, we have to at least show that we're not okay with that, right? Like, they have to look at that and have everyone who now tunes in to see the highlights, and the Department of Player Safety will make a statement that that's not okay by us. But I think if you're a hockey team looking at winning hockey games and you're going to have to go through that rival team and there are going to be hard-fought games and you're Zach Cassian, you can probably live with a couple of games suspension to make the statement you made. You probably don't hate how that unfolded, even though you lost the game and, you know, it's not safe and it's not all the nice things I'm supposed to say. You're probably okay with how that went.
So should I give you the ex-player explanation or the dad jeans that I'm wearing now?
Don't wear the dad jeans.
So,
get the dad jeans later. Give us ex-player.
When you're going to make a hit like that, you have to answer the bell. And what this does by this situation is not resolved. And we talked about it earlier that somebody owes somebody a fight. Where if Tkachuk just drops the gloves and deals with it, that's the end of it. And, you know, I'm hearing Tkachuk afterwards say, well, you got to keep your head up going down on the tracks. That's not the main tracks. That's not the main street. Main street's coming across the blue line. You know, that's Pearl Street. Or that's Station Street. You know, that's a little side corner street where Zach Cassian's coming up. So
yeah, exactly
am I a big fan of the hit? Not really. Is it clean? Yeah. But I remember as a player, I had some guys you know, in vulnerable positions. But before I made the hit, I would decide who it is. And again, if it's Chara, yeah, I'm not clipping Chara. If it's someone that I can, you know, probably handle, I'm going to, you know, make that hit. So somebody owes somebody a fight. And I remember, you know, when I was with Atlanta, Freddie Meyer hammered Milan Lucic. Milan Lucic got up, sucker punched Meyer. We had a brawl. We dealt with it. That was it. Next time we played Boston, that was the end of it. But now when you have these situations now, it's going to be a war in the media. It's going to be a war where something now, it could get more out of hand where, you know, maybe someone gets hit from behind. Maybe someone gets an elbow to the face where the Tkachuk guy decides to say, hey, you know what? I got to answer the bell here. I go, throw a couple left, slip on a banana peel. It looks good. That's the end of it. But I'm telling you, this can get out of hand. And the NHL says, oh, we like these war of words and we love it. It's good for the game. But don't be surprised if something really, really bad happens where someone really gets hurt.
That's why Department of Player Safety has to do something, because it can, and they have to say that they stepped in and did something.
If they don't, they'll have to build a bigger arena with more seats.
Yeah. If I can clarify one thing that we've said a couple times here, the idea that someone owes someone a fight. The just to explain that a little bit, I think the idea is that we are in agreement, I think all three of us,
that this isn't done.
That it's not done, but also that Tkachuk, probably if he wasn't okay with having to answer the bell there, he probably shouldn't be running out of position to try to level guys. Even though the hits are maybe clean and maybe whatever.
No, they're clean.
They're clean. Well, they're clean, but they're not clean within the realm of he's hunting a guy. He didn't
on
have
the code,
to go behind the net.
It's not clean.
He doesn't you're have to winger, chase as a winger.
If you're a winger, you don't need to come behind the net to make a hit.
Oh, hang on a second. I've got Colby Armstrong on line one. Rafi Torres on line two.
Mike Medano.
They both like to talk to you about whether those hits are clean or not.
Having done it before doesn't validate it. But the point is that so a few people would say that the Tkachuk owes Cashin a fight and isn't going to fight. So then you've made the point that maybe Cashin should go down Calgary's bench and say, that happens one more time, it's Johnny Gaudreau who's going to get it. Yeah. And if you're Calgary, you're saying, you can have your fight if you're mad. We'll throw you Zach Rinaldo. We'll throw you Lucic. And he's going, I don't want those guys.
So I want to get to that. I want to get to that matchup thing. Okay. One thing I want to follow up with, after the second hit, okay, so that's when Cassian snaps. If after the game, one of the reporters who was talking to Zach Cassian asked him if they should take hitting out of the game, what would his response have been?
No.
Then why attack someone after two body checks?
But what did he say? He loves that. He loves that. But part of that, the quote-unquote dirty boxing is for every time you give, you're going to be able, you have to receive. So if you're going to go in and run, you have to.
Philosophically, that's you saying don't hit.
No, if you go out of your way to make don't that hit, you go out of your way to...
Where in the rule book does it say you can't go out of your way to... Hang on. Where in the rule book does it say you can't go out of your way for a body check?
But this is where it comes to etiquette and code, where it's like, you can, but I know that when you're going out of your way to hit me, it's not within the confines of trying to win a hockey game.
And I think the issue, too, now, because it's Cassian, right? Again, what if that's... And I've heard people say, I think it's a different conversation if it's McDavid. Oh, look at that. Head contact. You can't be hitting the stars. And I guarantee you now, if that was McDavid getting hit, both of them are getting called to the podium.
Yeah, I don't disagree at all.
And that's another two. And I played with guys, and I'm telling you, as a player, if you don't answer the bell and other guys got to fight your battles, it's not great in the dressing room. I played with the guy that he would kill a guy from behind and just stand there and get punched out. And eventually you're like, dude, do you like getting punched out? We have to fight your battles for you, please.
Can
stop.
You give us the name here?
Please don't get punched out. Yeah. But it's something now where it's going to get blown out of proportion where I don't think the NHL wants to trend back to the way it was, where you're getting that street justice and you're, again, where just answer the bell, move on, get back to playing hockey.
But these were fumes from the old days where the games would take 3.5 hours, right? And it was a sea of gloves and sticks all
over
the
ice. But I guarantee
you
in 2-3 weeks, we're going to be sitting here, oh, well, this is going to be a byproduct of something even bigger now, where when it's the big boys involved, someone's going to get hurt. Everyone loved Doughty and Tkachuk because they're not going to drop the gloves now. But say what you want. Kachuk's part of the old, or Cassian's part of the old guard where he can knock you out and beat you up, leave you on the ice.
I do think that Cassian doing what he did may have prevented next game issues, though. Like, if you're Tkachuk, are you going to keep running the guy who's clearly does not care about the where the hockey game is at? I think it was 3-3 at that point, which, by the way, we should mention that was all great by Tkachuk.
The preface, if you're Tkachuk, my answer to that would be yes.
You would go at him again.
I don't expect Matthew Tkachuk to change his game one single bit.
But I bet you he won't. And this is a part of the bigger picture now. If you take fighting out of the game, this is going to happen more often.
That's always
when
what
my
we
brother
hear.
Tells me the sky is green and I say it's blue and he gives me a look, I say the sky is green because the threat of getting punched in the face, I'm just going to agree with him. That threat of getting punched in the face is going to make you not make hits like that. I guarantee you Tkachuk's not going to hit him again like that, knowing that potentially he can get punched out.
It's Matthew Tkachuk. I don't think he changed. You really think that Matthew Tkachuk is going to change the way he plays?
If he's afraid to fight,
does he run Ryan Reeves like that?
What's that?
Does he run Ryan Reeves like that?
Matthew Tkachuk? I think he'll run anybody.
Chara?
Yes. I think Matthew Tkachuk runs. I don't think Matthew Tkachuk is scared of anybody in the game.
Well, he seems scared.
How so?
Well, in that he doesn't want to face up to Cashin.
He got jumped by Cashin.
No.
Hang on. You guys think that was squaring up?
No, not necessarily.
Did Cashin square up? No, he grabbed him from behind and threw him down.
10 years ago, when there was a big hit, what happened? Everyone be looking around. Okay, it's something's going to go on.
It's coming.
Right? Yeah. So you can't just throw that hit and go, okay, well, let me pick my wallet back up, get back to business here. When that hit happens, especially the second time and the guy's helmet's flying, he's coming. You got to have your guard up, be ready to go. But I'm just worried now that this is going to blow up to something now where we're going to have to sit here and talk about an injury or something really, really bad where it could have been handled and dealt with yesterday.
So the question then is, what should happen in this instance when you have a guy like Tkachuk and he's clearly targeting one of your players and he's continually and they're clean hits. Boy, are they fringe clean, but they're clean hits. Mm. What are you supposed to do as the other team? Just allow it?
If I'm Giordano, I say, hey, buddy, you got to answer the bell here because we're going to have to be fighting these battles here.
I want to know what Jeff suggested is what you're supposed to do.
Yeah. We keep hearing that we need muscle on the bench to protect the stars. Last time I checked, Matthew Tkachuk was a star. This is now Milan Lucic's fight or Zach Ronaldo's fight in my world, right? That's the beginning of the game. Zach Ronaldo up to Cashin. Let's go. We're doing this.
That's not a pound of flesh for me if I'm Cashin. I'm not happy with that. I'm not happy getting beat up by Milan Lucic.
Cashin already got his pound of flesh. He grabbed him, punched him down to the ice.
Yeah.
But what happens now if someone runs, Goudreau or someone, and again, this can get ugly real quick.
Well, and that's the way, anyway, and this may sound the end.
Can I say that this is great, by the way?
Wow, like an emotional game on a Saturday night in NHL. Wow, remember when this used to happen?
That's the one thing, Alberta got more interesting. That's
with regularity. I remember when we worked with Marty McSorley here at Sportsnet. So one of the first times I worked with Marty, we went out after a show, went out and got a bite and a beer, and I was asking him about the Wendell Clark incident in 93. And everybody always talks about the fight itself and how, Wendell threw, three punches from the cellar at Marty and he ate all three of them and then, started his comeback. And I said, I'm more curious about the elbow that started the whole thing. Because if you remember, Doug Gilmour skates over the blue line and Marty hits him with an elbow that he started sending in Florida, and it had arrived in Toronto right at that time when Gilmour was stepping over the blue line. And it was hard. And that's where Clark went after McSorley, and then it was on. And Marty told me, he said, look, Wendell was going at Wayne, and I went to the bench, and I said, either 17 stops or it's going to be bad news for 93. And he didn't. He kept going at Wayne. It's fine. It's a program to do so. And then he said, so the first chance I got when Gilmour stepped over the blue line, I went at him. Now, that's the old school. And that is the code. Is it not? You go after our big guy, and we go to your bench and say, hey, like, there's no point in, two heavyweights fighting. If you want to, set down some enforcement, you go after our star, we'll go after yours.
Yeah, that's...
That's the way it is.
Prime example, and it's on YouTube now. Brad Stewart, my brother was in St. Louis, ran. Like, gave the Brad Stewart typical hip checking, just killed Alex Petrangelo.
Mm-hmm.
And you see 30 seconds later, a line change, and you see my brother come all the way to the corner. 30 seconds later, and challenges Stewart. Stewart decided he has to go and fight my brother right then and there, or it's going to get out of hand. So did he want to fight my brother? Probably not, because my brother's probably 50 pounds heavier, 35 officially.
and I love that asterisk every time.
The weights are still the best.
And they dealt with it, and that was the end of it. But if he would have said, skate away, I'm not fighting you. Well, then now, what if he goes and he runs Datsuk, or he goes runs Zetterberg? And it's a continuous thing now where you got to deal with it then and there, because you're going to have these incidents, and everyone's laughing about it now. But it's something where it can get really dirty and real dirty quick.
We'll see. There is a hearing later on this afternoon. By the way, on the 29th, Calgary and Edmonton exchange ideas.
Also the first, right? Like 2 days after that, I think they play again. Or 3 days after that. So we got some fun stuff coming
every
up.
Every night until the middle of
I want to know how many easy stews I'm going to get on Twitter today.
Easy stew.
Let's see what former NHLers go after you or poker stars go after you today. Okay, let's hear a couple of the clips from afterwards if you missed them. This is Zach Cassian on Matthew Tkachuk postgame on Saturday.
If you're going to hit like that, you have to answer the bell every once in a while. Like it's... especially 1, 2, 3 in the game. He got me in the third. He followed me in the corner, right? Like, he's clearly trying to target me, which I like. Like, I'm standing here. I love that stuff. I wish we could play him in a day and a half in, like, a playoff series, right? It was fun for me. We lost the game. It sucks, but all in all, he's just a young punk that has to figure that aspect out in the game. It sucks. He's a pretty good player, but he's a... be honest, straight up. That's the definition of it. He wouldn't fight me 2 years ago. Said I was a fourth liner. Now I have 13 goals. What's the excuse now? You know what I mean?
Couple things there. It's 2020. Let's drop the use of that word. Just to begin with.
Yes.
I'm a 13 goal scorer. Not a fourth liner anymore. How come we won't knuckle up?
I don't know. Okay. Sure. I guess he's making a point that he is... A used player. Usually you say, I'm not going to fight you because you play 4 minutes. That's not Cassian, so fair point.
Here's Matthew Tkachuk in retort on Zach Cassian post-game Saturday.
How did it feel to sort of play that physical style and continue to go at a guy like Zach Cassian and see his reaction, but one that you just were persistent with?
Yeah, I mean, well, if he doesn't want to get hit, then stay off the tracks. He's caught him 3 times there, so... I think he'd learn after the first one, but if he wants to react like that, we'll take the power play, we'll take the game winner, and we'll move on to first place.
A couple of points there. Yeah. Don't want to get hit?
I mean, no, those are great points by Tkachuk, but, like, I can't help but be moderately incensed if I'm Cassian hearing that. Like,
that's what I'm saying. He ain't stopping.
Yeah.
But the next step is if you don't want to get punched in the face, you don't make those hits.
This is Matthew Tkachuk. He will not stop. Then the question becomes, we'll go to break on this one, who owes who a fight?
I don't know if anyone...
Someone owes someone a fight.
Yeah. There's,
and I think everybody has a different opinion on who owes who
I think what. It's really funny that there's some, like, potential bargaining about this, about, like, who should fight who. But realistically, it should have just been done and over with, but... here we are.
Fight your own battles.
I don't disagree.
We're gonna have a ladder match. It's gonna be Tkachuk, Doughty, Cassian.
I would pay great money. Dana White is gonna orchestrate
hell
that.
Hell in a cell.
Saturday night, Drew Doughty was chuckling to himself. And oh yeah, let's put Cassian on the Christmas card list. We'll take a break. We'll get on the New Jersey Devils page here as the Devils have dismissed general manager Ray Shiro. Elliot Friedman from Hockey Night in Canada and 31 Thoughts joins us next. Hockey Central continues on Sportsnet 590, the Fan simulcast on Sportsnet and the NHL Network.
Now, more Hockey Central on Sportsnet 590, the Fan.
Quick Maple Leaf note for those listening locally here at Sportsnet 590, the Fan. Maple Leafs have called up Rasmus Sandin. Defenseman, standout defenseman of the World Junior Hockey Championships most recently, former first-round draft pick, someone that, if I'm telling this to you, you don't need the biography if you live in Toronto.
Yeah.
You know a lot about Rasmus Sandin. Been called up by the Maple Leafs. The Blue Line had a challenge last night.
Yeah, my hot take on this is that their defense has looked bad, and he's a defenseman, and he's good. So this makes sense to me.
You know whose price keeps on going up the longer he's out of the lineup?
Mick Jussen.
Yes, exactly. Yes. Whoa. Is Elliot standing by? He is. All right. From 31 Thoughts and Hockey Night in Canada, Elliot Friedman is going to help us make sense of the Ray Shiro situation in New Jersey. I'm trying to figure out here, Friege, if there's a crocodile.
Oh, 1 second. Yeah.
Yeah.
Did Riley practice today?
Didn't see. Not sure. Oh, they're off today though. They're off.
Oh, okay. I wondered if maybe he got hurt by that shot block last night.
Could be. We won't find out until tomorrow, probably.
Okay.
We shall see. Let me ask you this, because like everybody, the Ray Shiro news caught us all by surprise. Mm-hmm. I know that you're not surprised by much, So I'm not sure if you were surprised or not. But like many people, I'm trying to figure out whether there's a crocodile in the water on this one. And there's more to the just, you know, what we saw and heard from one half of the ownership group from New Jersey, which was a lot of losses and, you know, things need to change. Very vague in the reasons why Ray Shero is now ex of the New Jersey Devils. So my first question to you is, Elliot, is there a crocodile in the water that we're missing here?
Like, what kind of crocodile are you referring to? Like a behavioral one or something like that?
I think we're looking at a wild croc that no one sees coming and boom, it bites you. And that's the real reason why this person has vanished.
No, not as far as I know. I haven't heard anything like that, to be honest. So I don't believe that's the case, Jeff. My sense is from everything I can piece together, you know, Ray Shero got a 4-year extension last year.
Hang on, Elliot, we're having a hard time with your phone. We're going to give you a buzz right back. You might be in a bad cell zone. Our producer, Maddie, here is going to give you a ding back and get a hopefully a better line as we get into the Ray Shero situation with the New Jersey Devils. And it's always interesting when a team goes through Toronto. And my first thought is you've just let go of your general manager and you're walking into the media, the hockey media hurricane, which is Toronto, where everyone's attention now is going to be on the new interim general manager and the now ex-general manager in Ray Shero. If you are looking to get a national headline out of this, mission accomplished, because you just did it. We have Elliot back. Elliot, sorry, pick up on the conversation we were just having. I'm not sure where you left off.
Ray Shero got a 4-year extension last year. He was extended, and obviously the organization was all in lockstep with a plan to go for it this year. I mean, you saw all the moves they made, and they were in it to win it, and it didn't work. Now, that personally doesn't bother me a great deal. Sometimes you take chances, sometimes you work, and sometimes they don't. But the sense I got over the last couple of months is that they kind of, when they realized it wasn't going to work, and they were going to have to begin a new plan, was that there were some real differing ideas on, you know, where that plan should go. And, you know, the other thing, too, is I just think that, you know, the stress of the start of the year and why didn't it work, I do believe addressing goaltending was a factor. Should they have got a different backup? I think that was part of the decision. But I think the main thing was that, as the Taylor Hall talks began and the conversations went around dealing that particular player, and then, okay, what do we do now that that decision has been made and he's an Arizona Coyote? I just have been hearing for over the last 24 hours that there were other parts of the organization that were just not on the same page as Ray Shero. And they just decided that, you know, the way that they wanted to go was not the way that he wanted to go, and they decided to make the change.
I'm curious about the urgency, just, you know, to do it in season like this, you know, after you've let him make the Taylor Hall trade, after you've let him fire the head coach, you know, why you kind of wouldn't let the rest of the season go through, I guess, before you move on.
There's a couple, hang on, if we just pause, there's also the World Junior Championships and was just at the scouting meetings, I believe, as well. So this one...
I get the sense that this one was coming. Like one thing that I'm kind of getting a sense of today, Jeff and Justin, is that while it was a surprise to a lot of us, I think internally they saw that the divisions were forming. And as for why now, you know what, to be honest, if he's not on the same page with what ownership or other people want to do, why let him do the deadline?
So the thing that I can't shake when I look what's happening there is Martin Brodeur's presence as a front office member there and as someone who could potentially be involved or want a bigger role with the New Jersey Devils. Do you have any sense that this would be partially, you know, maybe moving in a direction where he could be the guy in New Jersey someday?
I think that, Justin, that is going to be the biggest question in where the Devils decide to go from here. As we know, Tom Fitzgerald is the interim guy. But I think one of the most interesting conversations, and I've already heard from a couple of people who could be candidates or know they could be candidates, and that is, how is this front office going to work? I don't believe that Martin Brodeur wants to be GM of the New Jersey Devils. Now, if you told me that he might want to be have the Brendan Shanahan kind of position or stay in an advisory role in that organization as he now has, I would believe that. I think that both of those two things could be true. I don't necessarily believe he wants to be GM of the Devils. And so I think that whoever is a candidate is going to want to know, okay, if I'm the general manager, yes, what is Brodeur's role going to be? He's going to have big juice in that organization. The other thing that I think people are going to be asking about is the analytics department. They hired Tyler Dello and Matt Cain over the last year. And when Tyler Dello's job was advertised, it was advertised as he would report to the owner. And I'm not saying that he or anyone else in his department submarined Ray Shiro. I'm not here to say that. But what I am here to say is that people will look at that and say, here's a group that has a direct link to ownership. What does that mean exactly? And I think that, and I do think it is possible, like one of the words I've kind of heard over the last 24 hours is collaborative. I think that they want to have a structure or a setup where a lot of people are able to have voices. Now, someone at the end of the day always has to make the final call. But I do think that whoever goes in there will have to understand that there's going to be a lot of people involved in the decision-making process, and how the front office structure is eventually going to work is going to have to be something that's going to have to get answered.
Elliot, let me pause quickly here on Tom Fitzgerald specifically, because as vague as it might have been, everything seemed to point yesterday at a difference in philosophy between Ray Shiro and ownership. Not aligned, not on the same page. Different direction for different goals for the team, different directions, different ways up a mountain. I look at this situation and I say, well, if there's any two that seemed more aligned than Ray Shiro and Tom Fitzgerald in New Jersey, I don't know who that is. Like, I'm just having a hard time philosophically saying, okay, the visions weren't aligned between Ray Shiro and ownership, but everything that we've heard from Tom Fitzgerald has supported the vision of Ray Shiro. What gives?
Well, I don't necessarily think also that, you know, Fitzgerald submarine Shiro either. I just think that from what I sense, I just get the feeling that when things started to go wrong early in the year, they wanted Shiro maybe to move faster to address them. And maybe one of those things was goaltending. Maybe getting, you know, they eventually did go out and they acquired Louis Domingue. You know, one of the stories that was told to me this morning by someone who, you know, not in the organization, but one of the stories they heard around the league was, I think they talked in September in training camp, was should they go out and address, do something then? And, So my thinking is that, again, I don't necessarily think that there's a disagreement between Fitzgerald and Shiro. I think you can be friends, as those two guys are, and maybe have a different way about attacking things. Also, when someone gets fired, somebody has to take over, and Fitzgerald is the most logical, sensible person there. And, you know, so I think you're kind of reading a lot more into it, maybe. But I do think the fact is that I think there was so much at stake in the Devils organization this year. It didn't work. I think they were sitting there and saying, okay, what are we going to do to have to address it? And do we have to address it differently than Shiro felt? And I think that's kind of at the crux of the matter, from what I understand.
So what's next for New Jersey? Do they come in and blow everything up, or do they stay the course and address everything in the offseason?
Well, I think one of the things they're talking about, Anthony, is they said yesterday they're tired of losing. Well, you know, the one thing I do support Shiro on is that sometimes when you make moves when you're losing, you're desperate, and that's when you make your worst trades. And I, you know, one of the people who was talking to him said to me today, talking to him in terms of trades, said to me today that he felt that that's one thing he was trying to protect against. I think what this probably says is that especially when it comes to their unrestricted free agents, the Vatanens, the Greens, players like that, they're probably open for business. And they're going to be willing to listen and see what the opportunities are out there. But, you know, I don't have any sense at this point in time. You know, some of the most valuable players on their roster
might be the Colemans, the Palmieris, and those are guys still with some term on their contract. And I don't know what they're thinking about those players at this time. Mm. Like, if the Devils really wanted to go out and get something, those are the kinds of players that they could really get something for. But again, if the message is to win, you're a lot better with those guys than you probably are without them, depending on your return. So I think that's going to be the biggest question. It's one I can't answer right now, Anthony, is I do think the rentals will be up for play, but I don't necessarily believe, I don't necessarily know yet if the guys with term who would have some real value are available.
I want to ask you about Alain Nezradin here in a second, Elliot, but first I want to revisit a conversation that you and I had on the podcast most recently, and I thought you brought up a really salient point. Perhaps it's appropriate here from a philosophical point of view, and that is the point that you made is when you're talking about the New Jersey Devils, always keep in the back of your mind that no other team comps more tickets than New Jersey.
Yeah.
How much of that is a factor in any decision that this ownership group makes?
Oh, I think that's always a factor. It's a business, right? And you got to sell. And I absolutely think that that is a factor. Now, the one thing I always try to remember with the Devils is that their ownership group also owns the Philadelphia 76ers.
Yep.
And nobody in the NBA tried a more scorched earth way of making it from the bottom to the top than the Philadelphia 76ers did, the process. And eventually, and they had their worst television ratings ever in Philly while they were doing this. They had big-time attendance problems. They had low confidence in the market, and they got out of it. They're a pretty popular team right now, and they're doing a lot better. But it's a long, long grind between here and there. And I think that what this says to me in New Jersey is that they've understood that it does take time to be successful, but they're at a place where they're saying, we want to see more success than this, and we want to have a better process or a different process between there and this. So I do think the business thing is a factor, but the fact they came out and said, hey, you know, we're tired of not winning, I don't know if that says to me that they're willing to do a big time Sixer style process here.
Elliot, do you feel like the role of owner is playing or is changing in the NHL? I just feel like years ago it was the type of people who owned a pro sports franchise as sort of a crown jewel to show people, hey, I own this. Now it feels like some owners are getting a little bit more involved than they have in the past. Do you think that's healthy? Do you think it's a trend, or is it just unusual? And I know Carolina had a change and things are a little different there as well.
No, Justin, I think it's very different. And don't forget that when we grew up, or actually luckily for you, you're considerably younger than me. But when I grew up, especially, you know, NHL was like a mom and pop kind of thing, right? Now this is a billion-dollar business. These teams are expensive to buy. Look, like an expansion team in Seattle just went for $650 million. I don't care who you are. That's a big investment. And what it said, and you have to believe that your owners are going to be involved. Like, you know, I don't know how anybody who's a general manager or a president of hockey operations could expect any different. You know, from what I understand about, you know, Harris and Blitzer, the two owners of the Devils/Sixers, they're demanding guys. They had a lot of conversations this year with Ray Shiro about what was going on. They're based in New York, and there were a lot of trips right into Manhattan to discuss everything that's happening. But I don't know how much money is at stake and the value of these franchises that anybody could expect any differently.
Elliot, I want to conclude on one point. This isn't the headline story in New Jersey, but it is a good one. Has it been noted how good a job Alain Nezradin is doing? I mean, here's a coach that just beat Washington, just beat Tampa, and has, if you're looking for the next head coach in the New Jersey Devils, put together a pretty good demo reel so far.
I don't think it goes unnoticed. I mean, it didn't go unnoticed to me last night when the Lightning's winning streak ended, that another GM in the league texted and said, I hope I don't beat Washington and Tampa because then I'm getting fired. So I do think it gets noticed. I mean, I'm a big believer in the right people always notice, right?
Yep.
And so, you know, I mean, depending on what New Jersey wants to do, look, people are seeing this. It's not escaping anyone's notice.
Excellent. All right. Thanks as always, Frege. Look forward to seeing you on Wednesday, reading you online and listening to your dulcet tones on the podcast.
Yeah, don't lie to everybody.
All right, you know. It's the truth. All right, Frege, we got to hustle. Thanks so much for stopping by. There he is, Elliot Friedman. We pause, we come back. We should probably get on the Maple Leafs page, as we are primarily a Toronto-based radio show here, guys. We'll hit that. The news of the day in Leafland, coming off the loss last night, Rasmus Sandin has been called up from the Toronto Marlies. Elliot speculating perhaps Morgan Rielly dinged up from the shot block last night, but we shall see. On the Leaf page next, Sportsnet 590, the Fan simulcast on Sportsnet and the NHL Network.
Now, more Hockey Central on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Welcome back to the program. Hockey Central on the air Monday to Friday, noon to 2. News of the day around Leafland, Rasmus Sandin called up. This on the heels of an 8-4 drubbing at the hands of Jonathan Huberdeau and the Florida Panthers. How does management feel when you lose in Florida?
Coaches check the game tape. The GMs check the hotel footage.
Yes, that's what I'm getting. That's what I'm getting at here, Stewie. you know what's up.
They also got time off there early to rest.
Yeah, but you know,
what's with the air quotes for those now?
It's easy
watching
it's television. Easy, you know, to find out what players are up to these days with social media. And again, I'm sure some guys went golfing. I'm sure some guys went fishing. Some guys went root beering. You know, that's part of being a National Hockey League player, where you got to know and pick your spots. So again, they could have went out, they couldn't, but it's tough to get up for a road game in Florida. It's a big building. They get 12 to 15,000 fans. I think it seats like 20, 21. So it's tough. It's kind of a dark building. So that energy isn't there, as opposed to a Montreal. So when, you know, you're in the sun, it's draining you, you're not necessarily hydrating properly, you come in and you start off slow. And the one thing is with the Florida Panthers, I want to write a list of, you know, teams have, players have their no trade lists. I'm going to write a list of teams you don't play run and gun hockey with. Florida Panthers is one of them. Florida, the Carolinas, the Las Vegas Golden Knights. Those are the teams you don't want to go run and gun with, because they got some good gunners on that team.
They can run and they can
they
gun.
They got Barkov. You know, Hoffman's not the most fleetest of foot, but he knows how to put the puck in the net. Jonathan Huberdeau looked like an all-star. So I think with this Toronto hockey bubble, I keep mentioning it, they keep forgetting that other teams have superstars, and a lot of them play a 200-foot game. Did you see Barkov shorthanded the other night, last night?
You're
coming in, you're going to throw an 8-foot drop sauce, backhand sauce in front of Sasha Barkov. He's going to go put that in your net.
Yeah, exactly.
So, again, Florida, again, I lived the lifestyle for a bunch of years. It's tough as a home player, but coming in on the road, if you don't come ready to go, Florida will jump on you. They got the guns. They can outgun you pretty quick.
Announced average attendance just over 13,000.
I think it was 15. I think it was 15.
Okay. That's from our producer, Matty Marchese. Whenever we talk about the best snipers, like pure snipers in the NHL, how long do you have to have a conversation before you finally get to Mike Hoffman?
I'm really happy you said Hoffman, because I was thinking Barkov and Huberdeau are the big names, but Hoffman's a shooter.
Oh,
yeah.
He always has been, too.
Yeah.
Like, ask anybody, like, what that release is like. Like, that short side goal that he scored yesterday.
Remember, it's like, Anderson's looking a little rough these days. It's like, boy, that's a tough spot against Mike Hoffman.
No one's stopping that
shot. My look at that game, my overarching thought is just the Leafs definitely do enjoy, as Anthony says, this run-gun style. They have all this talent. They're top-heavy up front. But their decor is not good enough to not have Jake Muzzin, to not have guys playing well. Like, they're flawed on the back end. And when they're missing guys and when they don't play well, because every player and everywhere is going to have weak nights. So for the Leafs, when they're weak on the back end, it's trouble.
And people say, well, the advanced stats, you know, they had a positive rating. They should have won that game.
Hour two. Hold on.
This is Hockey Central with Jeff Merrick, Anthony Stewart, and Justin Bourne on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
As we so rudely cut you off towards the end of hour one, I apologize.
Told you I don't get enough respect around here.
Busy calling his agent on break there. I'm a little nervous for my position. Want to complete your thought there for those?
Yeah, I was just talking about the advanced stats and saying, you know, they had 47 shots. But the one stat, if you think you're going to come in on the road and have six hits and only block four shots, I think you're going to get a win. It's a lot of flamingoing going on.
One of them might have been costly as well. We'll see about Morgan Riley. But
yeah.
How did you look at last night's Maple Leafs, Florida Panthers? From a Maple Leafs point of view, we've talked a lot about the Florida Panthers. From a Toronto Maple Leafs point of view, I mean, you know Sheldon Keefe, you worked with him. What goes it? Thank you, Matty, bringing me coffee. That a boy, Matt A. We'll see you later on for Matty Has Questions.
Old time.
Toe Blake, Eddie Shore. You're Sheldon Keefe. What's going through your mind watching that game? Some interesting notes, by the way, or comments on Freddie Anderson. We'll get to some Sheldon Keefe in a couple seconds.
I feel like he doesn't like being taken advantage of. He doesn't like being taken for granted. Like if you're a coach who says, all right, you know, the old guy said, you know, play defense and defense first and chip it out. And, you know, we're going to loosen it up and we get to play a little bit. And I'm, you know, I'm the guy who's, you guys have been asking, you want to have some fun and play, I'm going to let you play. And then you slap him in the face by completely neglecting defense, standing by guys in the defensive zone. You know, the layers aren't there. They're giving up odd man rushes. If you're Sheldon, you're going, I gave you guys days off. I've told you you can have a little bit of fun here. And then you give me that effort. So guess what you get now? Exactly. Now you either get tough practices, you get no rest because clearly you don't handle it well, or I need to switch things up and say, you know, less freewheeling, more, you know, the way I want to do it.
All right, let's hear from Sheldon Keefe. This is last night post-game Maple Leafs head coach.
You know, you take it as what it is, which is, you know, a good slap in the face and a good reminder of how we can't play if we have any intention at all of being a successful team. So, you know, big step backwards for us here today defensively. I thought coming out of that Winnipeg game, while we were pretty poor offensively, I thought we did a really good job defensively. Against their best players especially. We knew that was going to be a key again here today, and clearly we just weren't even close.
Not even close.
No.
That is the head coach after last night. It has to be. When you get that cookie from the coach, all right, you got an extra day in Florida.
Got to make it worth his while.
Isn't there like that added stress? Not unlike, and John Tortorella commented on this last season, you know, there was a long-standing tradition in the NHL of playing guilty.
I've done that a couple times.
Playing guilty, right?
Yeah.
Is there not that type of vibe if you're that team? Okay, we got the cookie. We got the extra day in Florida. It's in our best interests.
But let's keep in
not
mind.
Not to come out like we did last
night. Yeah, let's keep in mind it's a young team. Yeah. It's not a bunch of, you know, 29, 30, 32-year-olds, bunch of 20, 21, 22-year-olds. So it takes time to learn how to be a pro. And we talked about it with Berkey last week about just, you know, the diet, the fitness, the sleep, the not playing video games. So it takes time to learn how to be a pro. So this is a learning experience. But what are they, 0 for 4 now, their last four trips to Florida? And so maybe I think you got to go maybe stay in Hollywood. Or not Hollywood, sorry, up near Naples, and you drive in 2 hours and just go, and you got to go have dinner with the early birds at 4 o'clock p.m. But they got to switch things up because these are points that come.
This way everyone knows it. There are some teams that will do that. We're playing the Rangers. Yeah, we're not staying in Manhattan.
We stay in New Jersey.
We're staying out. Yeah. We're staying away.
You know what's another takeaway I had from that game was the backup goalie debate where, again, Hutch comes in to relieve Freddie Anderson, and like if the bleeding were stopped, the Leafs come back and score enough goals to make it interesting. The same thing happened against the Oilers, and that is not to blame Hutchinson, but it is to say that every time he goes in the net, minus like a win against Detroit, things aren't changing. It hasn't changed or stopped the bleeding yet for them. It's still a major problem that still needs to be addressed.
But if you go down two goals early, it's tough to come back game 60-80.
Oh, it's not why they lost that game. I'm not making that claim. Okay. It's just, you know, that's something they need to address here moving towards the deadline.
Sheldon Keefe did say that perhaps the solution for Frederick Anderson is more work because he seems to thrive. And we've seen this before. Pekka Rinne may be a great example. Pekka Rinne under Barry Trotz had a lot of work. He got a lot of shots. And he thrived. Pekka Rinne, when Peter Laviolette came in, I mean, the first thing they did was reduce the shots on net, and he struggled. Yeah. He was a different Pekarinen. He needs to feel the puck to get – goaltenders will tell you about this. Like, give me a lot of shots. Let me get into a groove. Let me get in – give me a feel for the puck, which is why I personally, when there's a goalie change, I know the hue and cry is always, oh, fire pucks at him. He's – fire pucks at him. He's cold. I was like, no, don't.
Wait till you got a good look.
Don't let him get used to the puck. Like, wait for the perfect shot. When a new goaltender comes in. But is there any concern here for Frederik Andersen? Or you just say, hey, long season, these things are going to happen?
I think there's concern, but it's one of those concerns where you're not going to do anything about it. You believe that he's good enough, you know, to get you through, to win a Stanley Cup. You're not doing anything with Freddie, so you're concerned. I will say that one thing that's going to be fun about Sheldon Keefe here in Toronto is he gives you some good quotes. And, you know, I think the question he was asked, like, is Freddie just tired? Does he look tired?
Yeah.
And the easy answer is, well, maybe we should get him less rest. And Sheldon's like, I think he needs to play more. Like, he's going to throw us some curveballs like that, which is going to be entertaining. The answer is probably not giving Freddie a ton more work right now, but we'll see, I guess.
Okay, Mitch Marner, let's hear from him. This is number 16 on the Leafs' defensive performance last night, or lack thereof.
We got people leaving our goalies out to dry. It's been too many games now. It's unfair to a guy that's been with us for the last 3 or now 4 years, I guess, and it's been our backbone for the whole time. So we got to make sure we manage the puck better, but at the same time, we make sure we have a guy high and we're filling our spots if the DA is pinching.
Six straight losses. Coffee. In this building.
Coffee.
Is there something about coming here? Or is there any way to explain that, or is it just the fact that they have so many offensive weapons?
No idea. I mean, tonight, like I just said, we're giving up too many chances, odd man chances. I got a lot of guys, and it seems like every guy that had a two-on-one had a gun of a shot or a hell of a vision to make a play. So, like I said, we're leaving our goalie out to dry on multiple goals tonight. It's so unfair to them, and we got to be way better.
So how do you get back on it Tuesday night?
Forget about this game. Leave it. Like I said, we know the team we can be when we are staying above people, when we're making it hard to get in our zone. We've got away from that. I don't know why it's been working for us, but we need to wake up here. I mean, we got a day off tomorrow, so everyone, I think, just go home and relax, lose this game, forget about it. Make sure we come ready against New Jersey. They've been on a bit of a hot run recently, and they got guys that can score, and they got a lot of guys that can make plays. So we got to make sure we make it hard for them to get in our zone. We got to make sure we make it hard for them to get around our net and make plays. And like I said, we got to make sure that we don't leave these guys out to dry again. These two tendies this year have been our backbone for a lot of games.
Mitch Marner with the heads up on how New Jersey's doing, beating Washington and Tampa this weekend. No surprise. Those are all the things you expect a player to say.
Yeah, saying the right things. I feel like the Leafs are, I have this toilet paper roll at home that you need like a hex key to tighten, otherwise it'll slowly come loose over a couple weeks and fall apart. And the Toronto Maple Leafs are that toilet paper roll, in that if Sheldon doesn't give them a tighten every other week, they fall apart and get loose like this. Mm-hmm. It's sad that like you have a young guy like Mitch Marner feels the need to like send messages and do some like hex key tightening, because they just, I don't know, they don't seem mature enough to stay on it and day in and day out without constant reminders.
With most teams that sort of play that freewheeling system, there's only like one or two, three guys max that could just sort of do what they want. But look at those goals. A lot of those times on defense, they're not even engaged. I remember Dwayne Sutter used to call me, hey, is your last name Swoops? Because you're always just swooping around the puck. And you'll notice now they're coming in and they're just sort of swooping, hoping that they get a piece of it and so they can go off to the races. There's no stops and starts. There's no urgency to get to the point and block a shot. You know, there's three or four of those goals were just basic NHL, mistakes where you got to protect the middle, you got to block a shot, you got to recover back to the house. So when people talk about the details and playing the game the right way, that's what you have to do. So, you know, I can expect that and accept that from Marner and a Matthews, but, you know, Freddie Gauthier shouldn't be trying to get that puck and go off to the races on, you know, you got to stop and play it, pay attention to the details, especially in the defensive zones.
Yeah.
Cuteness. It really gets magnified when you're losing. When you're winning, it's described as, wow, it's fun. It's you know, pod hockey. It's great. It's the 80s all over again. And when you're losing, you look at it and you say, these guys are playing too cute. Is there a team in the league that plays as cute as the Maple Leafs.
No, that's a good word for it. That's the, you know, the little 2-foot passes and, you know, trying to
come with a blue line, little lazy backhand pass to try to get zone and whoop, the other way.
Yeah, that's just a, you know, Stewie made the point before that, like, other teams have good players and you have to respect that. Like, when they're on the ice with Huberto and Barkov, you don't get to play cute like that. You still have to be diligent. And I think it's harder to be diligent when you're not under the bright lights, when you're in a place like Florida, when you're, you know, it's sort of a different sort of mentality or pace there. And that's not to excuse it, but this team does, they need some leaning on. They need constant tightness.
They have to get away from cookie time. Like, it's 4-0 and Hyman scores. Guys are celebrating. Yeah, we score. Yeah. Yeah. Dude, it's 4-1. Drop your head, go back to the faceoff and go score three more. Right. Don't be sellying. So it's almost they're content with
it. Or doesn't that try to build an energy like, yeah, no, guys, we can come back here.
If it's 4-0 and you're smiling, you know what Mike Keenan would do to you?
Mike Keenan different. Styles don't coach in the league
Jacques
anymore.
Jacques Martin, you know what? You know, so you got, it's like, it's well, we, you know, we scored four goals. We're good. We're good here. But we're talking winning a round, winning multiple rounds, contending for the Stanley Cup. You got to tighten it up, as you said.
These are two teams that are going to be clawing and scratching for the rest of the season. And these are two teams that are going to meet up often as the season winds down. It very much looks like this is going to be Tampa, Boston. Take your pick for first in the division. Second is wrapped up by the team that doesn't get first. And the Maple Leafs or the Florida Panthers will be in third. Mm-hmm. And someone will be battling for a wild card spot. Yeah. Is that the way it's looking for you guys?
You're playing.
Oh, and by the
Tampa
way,
Tampa and Boston to get
Sergei
the
Bobrovsky
finals.
Hasn't been Sergei Bobrovsky yet, and if he ever finds that, there's trouble. If you're a Maple Leafs fan,
yeah, no, there's a first round matchup that the Leafs will end up complaining about. Regardless, I said going into this season, like, winning the division had to be an absolute priority for them. Obviously, we know how things went at the start of the season. So now they're in a tough spot here, where you're going to have to beat good teams, and to beat good teams, it is about that, unfortunately, and this is no fun to hear as a player or a fan, but it's about diligence, and it's about doing it time and time again and consistency, and, you know, that's just part of winning against good teams, and they just haven't shown they can do that consistently.
It's tomorrow a must-win game. Here we are mid-January, and I'm saying must-win games, but it's tomorrow a must-win game. Coming off the performance in Florida, when all the things that you guys just said are front and center and talked about here and elsewhere, and by the Evil Telecoms hockey show, and every website that you turn on about hockey.
Well, I think so now, because you're looking at Florida's next four games here. They got LA, Detroit, Minnesota, Chicago, where they might now be jumping up and looking at Tampa Bay. So they're not out of the woods here yet, right? And remember, Columbus is playing better hockey, so they have to put together a string of games here. If not, they could be on the outside looking in, you know, at the beginning of January.
Oh, is this the could the Leafs miss playoffs debate?
I'm not willing to have that one yet. But how much is tomorrow's game a must win for the Toronto Maple Leafs?
I think it's really important, you know, particularly going into the break. And they're the games leading up to the break. They have, was it New Jersey, Florida? Yeah, they have an easier three games. I'm not sure what the three are off the top of my head, but I remember looking and seeing.
Don't count
three.
Florida easy for these guys.
Yeah, well, fair enough.
They have New Jersey, Calgary.
Calgary's not easy, man.
Calgary, Chicago.
Yeah, okay. New Jersey, Calgary, Chicago. Three games you would expect if you're going to be one of the teams in the top third of the league. You know, Calgary's the toughest game of that group there, but certainly, you know, you're looking at 4 or 5 points there. So you want to go into that stretch feeling good about yourself, in a good position in the standings. I do think it's very important for them.
All right. I want to get Stewie mad.
Ooh.
I want to get Stewie angry. But in order to do that, I've got to find the latest from Matthew Tkachuk. Matthew Tkachuk has spoken again. Where did I put those comments?
Did you grab them? You grab them. I'm going to try to reply with someone's Twitter response, so let's go.
All right, hold on a second here. So we all know what happened on Saturday.
Matthew Tkachuk is like a bikini. Are we there again?
No. Okay, no. Sorry, that's the analytics bikini thing that Stewie brought up on Friday. Let's see what he's got now up his sleeve. We're still trying to figure out who needs to fight who, too. We haven't settled that yet. Someone owes someone a fight. We
a
just
lot
don't
of people
know who it
that
is.
Are pulling their hair out, but so be it.
All right, this is an Eric Francis tweet this year. These are comments from Matthew Tkachuk. Love him. This morning. Not fighting was probably the right thing to do there. If it was a different type of player. Oh, that hurts if you're Zach Kassian. You hear that?
That's on purpose.
If it was a different type of player out there, maybe. but it wasn't the right time to do it. I have a feeling half the people in the league wouldn't go with that guy. I just think I'd rather be out there than in the box with him, and I'm sure if you ask my teammates, they'd rather me out there.
Well, Cannon Light from Twitter, his response was, "Hey, Stu Monroe, I totally agree with you. If Tkachuk isn't going to fight his battles, then he shouldn't be laying out those hits. Oh. Who cares that he's the star? Not Cassian, nor will any other enforcer."
So if you're Twitter not going to fight, you shouldn't hit. It's funny because I
choose wisely who you're going to hit.
So who is that sent that in?
Cannon Light.
Can you respond on behalf of Jeff Merrick?
Jeff says.
No, Jeff asks.
Jeff
would
asks.
Would you like to see? You actually hear that because you got the berries. So you can hear the click, click. Do you think hitting should be removed from the game?
By the way, it is the most.
I find that people that say hitting needs to stay in the game are the ones that are most sensitive about it and want fights right after. And listen, I don't mind a fight. I enjoy a fight. How many times have you been to my place where you stayed up watching hockey fight video?
Yeah, no, party, I know right? you enjoy a good tilt.
I just don't see that Matthew Tkachuk needs to fight after those body checks.
Yeah, I understand I don't think those things are necessary. I think they can be, you can want fighting or hitting in the game. And at the same time, it makes sense that sometimes even clean hits need to be answered for. And I thought that those hits were an example of that, where he was clearly going out of his way to get someone. And, you know, I can't see Cassian just taking it over and over. And I don't know.
Do you think that this was deliberate? If you're Matthew Tkachuk, maybe anyone on another team too, you say to yourself, I can sucker this guy into taking penalties if I hit him clean and hit him hard.
Well, I think there's an element of making a guy mad who is, you know, is excitable. I definitely think that's an element of it. I think in that game, it made a lot of sense. Now that they're playing again, to Stu's point, I think now that Cassian's had time to think about it and have other people talk to him, I think if I'm another Flames player like Gaudreau, I'm like, I do not like where this is going. Yeah.
I know the game's changed, but I'm just worried about the long-term, you know, repercussions of this incident, because when I've played, guys would like that, making those types of hits would get dealt with. And sometimes it doesn't end up good. So I know this is a new breed, new NHL, but, you know, Zach Cassian's probably the bottom of the list of targets of guys you should be trying to run over.
Okay, elsewhere around the NHL, you mentioned Columbus a couple of seconds ago, and let's get there. That's a big win against the Vegas Golden Knights. So we can talk about Vegas if you want. They're having a dip right now. But this is maybe... I mean, that time, listen, last year he knocked off the Tampa Bay Lightning in the first round. He had a power play that reminded us of the 77 Habs and the 81 Islanders. So John Tortorella has done some special things so far with the Columbus Blue Jackets. Where does this rank for you guys and John Tortorella? His performance behind the bench as this team is decimated.
I mean, way, way up there. They're having an incredible run here.
Is this the most impressive thing John Tortorella has done with the Blue Jackets?
Probably, yeah.
Tampa was big. I get that. Like, knocking that out, like, that's
right.
No one saw it coming.
But no, this has been a very impressive run. I was among the people willing to write off Columbus after losing multiple stars, three stars this offseason, and then starting the season poorly. So to be
this
able
is
to,
without Korpisalo. Like, you just keep interjecting. This is without.
So without Bjorkstrand, Milano, Murray, Atkinson, Dubinsky, Texier, it's a lot of guys.
Alone without.
I'm waiting for the call now.
You're next up, next man up. But
can't
it is impressive.
Can't dry away from the Nats, man. It's scouting season right now.
But you know, Columbus is not a team you look at and go, boy, you know, they get in, look out. I still feel like it's just what he's done with a group that probably is playing above their talent level.
Yeah, and I almost feel bad because they lost Panarin and Bobrovsky. Imagine if they had those two players. They would have been over the top right now. I know offensively they're 27th in goals per game and the 23rd best power play, but they're paying attention to details on defense. He's got them playing good defensive system. Goals against per game, they're 6th in the league. Their penalty kill is 13%. So, attention to the details. So I know you want to have that high-octane offense, but look at Columbus and how they're paying attention to the details defensively, because they're doing it because they have to do it. Give me a little bit of that, Toronto, please. So I'm not trying to drag the conversation back to Toronto.
What does this mean for the Maple Leafs?
Yes, what does this mean?
Columbus just beat Vegas.
And they
from
have
the Maple
12
Leafs perspective, Anthony Stewart.
But And again, I try to coach my teams because I'm trying to coach them in the light where I was deficient as a player and I didn't pay attention that much to defense. So you want to be a good defensive team because that's how you win championships.
One of the things that stood out to me that game against Vegas is Emil Bemstrom, who is not exactly a household name by any stretch of the imagination. And he did something we've been waiting for a while, and that's get that one-timer off. This guy can flat out hammer the puck. You know, guys, you just go out there and you see them taking one-timers and they're denting posts and denting crossbars. That's this guy. Like, so, they have a weapon. And you can see the whole power play was revolving around getting the puck to the left side so Bemstrom can hammer it.
Yeah. This is it speaks to a trend in hockey. So the first generation of players to reach the NHL who from age 4 on had one-piece hockey sticks is probably like now, right? Like, what are hockey sticks like that? 20 years old?
Yep.
Probably about that?
Everyone grabbed them after the lockout, 204, 05, and a lot of guys had a hard time specifically but taking passes.
That was when they first sort of came around. So that was 15 years ago. So they probably were, that's probably is about when 20-year-olds in the NHL now have been using these sticks their entire lives. I think we are going to see a wave of shooters. Because look at some of the best shooters in hockey right now. Yes, Ovi has the best one-timer of all time. But the Matthews release, the Lion A shot, the way Elias Pettersson shoots the puck, the way Brock Besser shoots the puck, the way, you know, outside of all of the best releases that I can think of outside, probably Tarasenko is the oldest guy with one of those deadly releases, are this young wave of players, and I expect that to be a trend.
And I coach minor Bantam kids, so they're 13 turning 14. Some of them are shooting 80, 85.
Jeez.
And some of it can be the stick, but some of these kids now, they're 5'9", 180 pounds. And I'm like, I can't process how good these kids are going to be in five years, you know, 8 years. Some of these kids are better than me skill-wise in minor bantam.
Did you see, speaking of sticks, we'll get to break on this one. Speaking of sticks, did you see Braden Schenn last week and Jake DeBrusk over the weekend? You see the new Bowers they're using?
No.
With holes in the blade?
Oh, yeah, I know.
Don't get me started on the sticks.
Reebok had the holes in the shaft.
Yeah.
But Bauer's got the long, almost rectangular hole in the blade.
So is it not supposed to tape over that or what?
DeBrusk did, but only half of it.
It's a broom ball?
I don't know what the... I don't
Power,
know.
Go back,
I
don't to, know the, go back a, to the drawing board with that.
I'm a gearhead. Like, I'm a gear geek when it comes to stuff like that. I don't know what the advantage is.
These black market sticks that I'm selling from China right now, they're flying off the shelves. I'm telling you, everyone's been ordering them.
Shelf in your
Matt
bedroom.
Matt Marchese's going to come in, and he's going to order a couple. I'm going to bring it in. So hit me up on Twitter.
Did you guys see, like, you can search it out. It's an image search of DeBrusk on the weekend. There's a couple. Actually, I retweeted a couple of screen caps.
Like, logically, I get the concept, right? The Les Winderzins says that you could probably swing it faster. But I don't know.
I don't know. Yeah. I saw it. I'm like, what is this? Schenn was the first, Braden, St. Louis. And then Jake DeBrusk picked it up on the weekend.
I thought you were going to talk about the Matthews when he flipped his partner's stick up.
That was pretty fancy, too. We should probably discuss that.
He said that it was a penalty.
It is.
Is it?
Not the new NHL.
The NHL does not want...
The refs are playing. That's sick.
I can assure you, the last thing the NHL wants is players flinging sticks all over the zone.
You better take it
easy.
You might get an easy stew for Mike Modano. You might.
I think that's my favorite thing on Twitter.
Easy stew?
Of all time. Getting easy stewed by, like, one of the greatest players ever to play.
If Wade Gretzky chirps me, I think I'm going to retire. If I get chirped
by... Just put the IFB on the microphone. I'm
getting Gretzky to tweet easy stew once.
Just going to coach. The Nats, I'm done. No more of this media stuff. Got chirped by 99. Hitting a break. More Hockey Central in a moment. Sportsnet 590, The Fan, Sportsnet, and the NHL Network.
More Hockey Central on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Welcome back to the program. Another reason why you should follow at Stu Monroe. Up the plastic blade and threw a Bauer tag on it for the new Nexus.
As soon as you said hole in the blade, that's what came to mind.
You guys just saw that on the...
Yeah. Yeah. That's,
what'd you think?
I tend to think that things like that are gimmicky, but at least I get the logic of holes in the blade. I get the logic. You could swing it faster if there's less wind resistance.
I don't get it because I'm trying to speak on behalf of the parents with all these prices. I used a Sherwood wood stick up until NHL draft year, and I scored 35 goals. So when these parents say, he broke another stick, I don't care.
Yeah, but Terry Sawchuk had
like 100 shutouts using his
equipment. I don't want any kids using Terry Sawchuk's equipment. He had like 103 by that logic.
Yeah, there's a middle ground between every $300 stick that hits the market.
$375 these parents are paying for sticks.
That's asinine. Is that true?
Oh, yeah, it is.
That's
$375.
That is preposterous.
And 30 days, done, boom. 31, yeah. They're pre-programmed. 31 days after the warranty, they break.
Do you remember the road hockey sticks that you tweeted that did have the holes at the top?
But they didn't hold
the curve?
No, you'd have to always, when you had a shift off, you'd always be bending them on the bench.
That was the worst. Not a quality product.
No, those are great. Those are fantastic. You know what else is fantastic right now? Pittsburgh Penguins.
Yes, they are.
Pittsburgh Penguins' story continues to be a great one. And Jack Adams, Mike Sullivan.
He's my guy.
You got Malkin, and then you had Crosby, and then you lost Crosby.
Since Crosby was injured, the Pittsburgh Penguins have the best record in the NHL. Let the gravity of that sink in one more time. Since Sidney Crosby was injured and out of the lineup, the Pittsburgh Penguins have been the best team in the NHL. We can grouse about the top 100 of all time in the NHL, which somehow did not include Evgeny Malkin, for another day. This coaching, that player, and performances like players like Brian Rust have been outstanding for the Pittsburgh Penguins.
Yeah.
This has been another marvelous job by the Penguins.
One of the greatest tweets, I think it's from Acton the Fooleman is the Twitter account, but was like the Pittsburgh Penguins, that team, you always check who they're dressing that night, and it's like, you know, Flim Rafferty and Sam Donk.
Buzz Flibble. Mike Donk and Buzz Filbert.
Somehow both guys have like 45 points. They've done an incredible job at bringing guys up from Wilkes-Barre and plugging them in. And they just continue to have success.
Is that the best battery in the NHL of NHL to AHL teams as far as players making that transition and stepping in?
But maybe they're one of the blueprints now, because remember, Wilkes-Barre is with, you know, close proximity to Pittsburgh. And I think that's a big, big thing. When I was in Rochester, some guys would miss games. Because the flights would be circling above Fort Lauderdale Airport for 2-3 hours because you had to fly from Rochester 3 hours to get the call. So it's good that guys are within close proximity because you can go, you can watch, you can pay attention. So I think now teams are starting to now, hey, you know what? We need to get our farm teams better, because you got guys like Dominic Cahoon coming in, stepping up, Simon stepping up, Bluger scoring was a shootout winner, I believe, last game. Brandon Tanev scoring big goals. I don't think he was part of the system, but Lafferty, all these guys that are coming up through the system, that's how you build not just a contending team, but a perennial contending team.
Jake Gensel, keep going on down the list. You know, there's...
Galchenyuk.
There is a couple of different schools of thought on that, on the American Hockey. Now, I think the common wisdom is the right one, that you want your American Hockey League team as close in proximity to the NHL squad as possible. For that, guy goes down at 2 o'clock with whatever injury or sickness or whatever, quick Uber, and you're at the big rink for the game that night. There are, and I think Lou Lamoriello felt this way, that you want your American Hockey League team to be far away, because psychologically you want those players to feel like they have to get somewhere physically. That is old school. Yeah. I think I might be overthinking it too.
Yeah.
But that is the logic behind it.
Yeah.
Like, look at Vancouver and Utica. Dude, the Vancouver Canucks and the Utica Comets.
I know.
Have a look at your map.
Yeah.
But as a player, trust me, I've been sent down a lot. The number one thing getting sent down from camp, the number one stress is, oh, man, now I got to go get a house in Rochester. Now I got to go get a place in Chicago, which wasn't that bad. But you have to go in the human element. Whereas if you're getting sent down Toronto, well, it's not really changing your living situation. You're going to probably live in the same place, or you don't have to really worry about accommodations. You don't have to worry about my first year in Florida. I got hurt, dislocated my wrist. My arm is literally, covered in bandages from, my whole entire arm. And they're like, we're going to fly you to Rochester and you're going to drive your car. Here's your medication. You're going to drive your car back from Rochester. I'm like, no, I'm not.
Disagree. But this is the thing, being with the Marlies, you go to what's now the Ford Performance Center, you see guys with injuries that, they had access to the NHL staff. And, you know, the treatment for the injuries was one thing. The ability to, you know, have your programs intertwined so that when someone does get called up, they're just plugged right in. Everyone is comfortable, and you eliminate all the other stresses of getting called up and finding a place. And I think there are tangible benefits, not just like, you know, maybe psychological ones of being right there with your team.
I turned down a call up one time because of the travel. I'm not coming.
Yeah. Turned down a call up.
I got turned down. Florida was going to Ottawa, and it was a snowstorm, and I was in Rochester at an event, a team event. And they're like, so we're gonna play in Ottawa tomorrow. They called me at like 1:30 in the morning. And, okay, we're going to send a limo to pick you up.
Well, what time of the season was this?
This was near the end of the season. Okay. So I already hit my bonuses. They sent me down 9 times already.
Hit my bonuses.
And they're
already.
Like, well, we're going to send a limo, and, you know, it's a big snowstorm. It's going to take about 11 hours to travel to Ottawa, and you're going to play one game in Ottawa and then come back. And I'm like, no, I'm okay. I honestly turned down the call.
I asked.
You just turned down a call?
Mine was only ECHL, AHL, but my girlfriend and now wife was flying from New York to Utah, and her plane left, and she was in the air, and I got called up and had a flight leaving in like an hour and a half. And she was going to, I talked to her before she left, she was going to land in Utah, and I was going to be on a plane to LaGuardia, the same airport she had just left from. And I was like, am I going to be the first person to deny a call, to turn it down?
No, how about turning down one to the NHL?
Yeah, that's next level. That's
I already
impressive.
Got my money.
spoken like a true hockey player. I want to take this opportunity now, 1 hour and 36 minutes into the program, to publicly apologize to you, Anthony Stewart.
Oh, I finally get some respect. Yes, I love it.
You don't get enough credits.
Yeah, not enough credit.
No, this isn't about credit.
Okay.
This is about, as a host,
yeah,
I haven't given you the proper platform now to boast about Ilya Kovalchuk over the weekend.
Oh, yes.
It's taken me over an hour and a half to lay out the runway here for you to land.
Yeah. I told you so. But I was getting ready to get my gift ready because Kovalchuk had the breakaway the beginning of overtime, and I was ready. Woo. I'm like, I'm sending this to the group chat. But it's good to see. And the one thing people always say about Ilya Kovalchuk, he's a good person. And again, when
the guys love him, you see them come off the bench.
Yeah,
they love him.
And keep in mind, like, people don't understand like how much money he made in Russia. He can retire. His kids can retire right now. That's how much money he's made in Russia. And he's doing it for the love of the game. He's eating a lot of crow in the NHL. It's all about respect. And say what you want, I feel he's been disrespected. Again, he's a great player. And it's good to see guys like that get a second chance and have success. So I think he's got, what now, 1 goal, 3 assists, I think, in the 4 games that he's played.
10 or 11 stick handles, by the way, is what we counted.
10 or 11?
That's what Maddie just said. You counted him, Maddie?
I thought it was like 26, but there's no way he was passing that in.
No.
If I was the guy going to that, I'd just do a button hook and say, get off.
Yeah, it's called for a change. Actually, I hang around long enough to get your plus, I guess.
Yeah.
Was there any doubt that thing was going in?
No, but like, thank you very much for being humble.
Well, no problem. Listen, it's well earned.
Yeah,
by
you. If anything cemented Kovalchuk as a win, it's him on a 9-minute 2-on-1 shooting from the forward tees. Like, I'm not ready to call that a win just yet for Montreal, minus the game.
That was a big one for the Montreal Canadiens to stop the bleeding. It's going to stop eventually. Not that anyone doesn't think that the problems still don't exist there, but good on the Habs.
No, it's good. They do need. They are trying to win hockey
really
games.
I'm condescending saying that. I apologize, but
yeah, but they're not. You're right. They're not trying to roll over and just say, "Well, we'll get them next year, and we want a high pick." This is a team that's trying to push and trying to win games and trying to stay in the fight till they can get healthy. So those points are big for them.
They are. We'll hit a break. We will come back with Maddie has questions. By the way, we should mention. Oh, you don't know. Let's do Friege. Friege in hour one. Friege in hour two. Before we get to break. Elliot Friedman from Headlines on the Weekend. So much of our programming here and on television is going to be oriented towards what are teams going to do in advance of the trade deadline. This is one of the topics du jour on Headlines on Hockey Night Saturday.
Just some trade stuff as we get within 6 weeks of the deadline. A couple of things. The Rangers have 3 goaltenders up. Lundqvist, Shesterkin, the rookie who won the other night, and, of course, Alexander Georgiev. And there's been a lot of talk about what they're going to do. Well, the word is out now that the Rangers will at least listen on Georgiev. They've got a lot of good defense prospects coming, and they obviously don't need goalies. So teams are under the impression that it won't be cheap. It will cost you, and it will probably cost you a forward who's either as young and either ready to play or close to it. But they won't listen to anything that's that doesn't impress them beneath that. Also, San Jose, there's been a lot of talk about what the Sharks will do, struggling in the Western Conference. Logan Couture out for a good chunk of time. The Sharks have made it be known that they look at this the way they looked at 2014-15, the last year they missed the playoffs. The following season, they went to the Stanley Cup Final. That's their goal, to continue to contend for next year. They don't plan on removing any of their core. They will talk about their UFAs, Brendan Dillon, Melker Carlson. I think there's a lot of interest in Dillon, potentially even a team like Toronto kicking the tires there. And finally, Anaheim. The Ducks have let it be known that they've got cash and cap space. They are willing to listen to you if you want to use them to help you clean up your cap problem. However, it's going to cost you good young assets.
Weaponizing cap space. Smart by the Anaheim Ducks. I am surprised more teams don't do that. But here we are. A couple of things there. Alex Georgiev, and he starts tonight for the New York Rangers. Igor Shesterkin was not even dressed on Saturday, and one text I got was just, free Shesterkin. It is the Islanders and the Rangers tonight. Georgiev, is this a showcase night for the goaltender?
Yeah, I think so. This is get him on the big stage. I think people know what he is at this point. You know what's interesting? This Islanders-Rangers game, they haven't played in a year. 366
You told me
days.
That we came in today, and it blew my mind. That long?
Yeah.
Is that the longest stretch these two teams have ever gone, really, since the Islanders came in 72?
Yeah, kind of bizarre. And now they play three times in the next 2 weeks, so should be exciting. Hopefully get a little Battle of Alberta, you know, action, a little bit of rivalry fun going on. But the Georgiev thing is going to be interesting to watch.
You know, with the Leafs, though, it's, do they take a flyer on him, or do they wait into the offseason and really try to address the situation? And is Georgiev a long-term backup solution for...
He's $700,000. That's his contract. It expires at the end of the year, at which point he is a restricted free agent.
Yeah, but the fans are just saying, well, he came in and he stoned us a couple times. He looks good. So I think they just stay the course and find a long-term solution. They need to come in and really take a long, hard look at what's out there, do the dollars and cents. You don't want to necessarily make a move just based on, hey, we need to make a move and we're going to give you a Johnson or something like that. They got to now make a calculated move because they sort of been dragging their feet on this now. They might as well just wait and address it in the offseason.
Is there a chance that the Rangers don't do anything with them? Keep the three-headed situation. Lundqvist has the one more year on his contract, and maybe long-term it's Shesterkin and Georgiev as your two goaltenders. It just might be a little bit awkward getting there.
Yeah, it's probably ideal, but I don't think you can talk goaltenders into just ride out another year of, you know, what could be the prime earning years of your career here. So that's a tough situation for them, but they probably have to move someone to get some assets back.
I think the Devils would be interested in Georgiev, and do you think the Rangers would deal with the Devils?
Yes and no.
You never do a deal with the Devils if you're in New York.
The Arizona Coyotes did, and they have Taylor Hall due to it. All right, now we pause. Step away. We're back with Matty Has Questions next on Hockey Central, Sportsnet 590, The Fan, Sportsnet, and the NHL Network.
Now, more Hockey Central on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Let the chirps begin. Welcome back to Hockey Central. Our producer, Matty Marchese, in studio. Stewie, as always, fresh off the runways of...
I don't know. He borrowed the elbow pads from The Rock. You're going to do some people's...
Yeah, it's going to be on you.
The people elbow there with those elbow pads? those are just...
I don't want to... I really don't want to fight you, Steve.
What is that, denim?
No, it's not.
The jean jacket?
You know what's funny? You didn't make fun of this jacket last week.
I just saw the elbow pads that were attached to
Jeff liked them. He called me professor.
Takes you back to my university days.
It passes. I like it.
Okay.
What do you got? Matty has questions. What do you got today? We only got a couple minutes.
I know. Freed short shifted me. I can't believe
it. Sorry, man. If you're going to bring some juice, you want to talk about who San Jose's moving, or you want to know Anaheim weaponizing cap space, go for it.
No, I don't have any of that. But right. I do have a question, and it is, which team is at the bigger risk of taking a downward turn in the second half? The Islanders, Coyotes, or Oilers?
Three good candidates, I think. You've selected there. I'm not popular in Arizona right now for something I wrote fairly recently, but I think there is some reason to be skeptical about them, and I think that Pacific Division, there's some teams due to climb a little bit. I'll take the Coyotes.
I'll go with Edmonton just based on something that I gift recently, and I think it's they're not getting the tertiary scoring. So
there it is.
They need guys to step up. They need other guys to, you know, to contribute offensively, and you know, McDavid and then Draisaitl, I think they're slowing down a bit from their 139 points clip, so they need other guys to step up.
By the way, that Cassian hearing gets underway at 2:30 Eastern.
Free
right
Cassian.
Now, if you're listening live, it's 1:50 Eastern. I'm going to go with Borney and say Arizona. As much as it pains me because I want that team to do well, they're probably, out of all those three teams, probably the most precarious.
Okay, since you mentioned the Cassian hearing.
Just because they're not going to score. They're having a hard time scoring, yeah. As we've seen, if the goaltending's
It gets tough softens. Later in the year, and if the goaltending, exactly.
Yeah. Speaking of the Cassian hearing, how many games, or does he get any?
I say three. I think it's Darnell Nurse, Roman Polak all over again. Don't think it's going to be Carkner Boyle. That was one.
What's Cassian's history? I know there's the spin around stick whip, right? That was that.
On Sam Gagner.
That was a suspension. So he's got a couple on his name. At least that one. I can't think of another one. But that plays into the suspension total.
I am working on that.
I say zero old time hockey. Dick Clapp, ready, short.
I'll say he gets two because I think the people in the office making the decision also kind of like the play.
And because three would mean you're going to miss a Calgary Edmonton game. So we're hoping less than three.
Don't do that to
three,
us, NHL. Yeah.
Right?
You got to cap it at two.
You want him in both of those games for sure.
Yes.
Brendan Smith and Mark Pisick are the latest defensemen turned forwards. You know, they follow Brent Burns, Dustin Byfuglien before them, Mark Howe, and Red Kelly. Why don't we see players that can play multiple positions? And I mean forwards who can play defense and vice versa.
Good question. I think
we're heading that way.
Over-specialization right now is definitely a problem. If you can play hockey, you can play hockey. And, like, man, it is not complicated to be a winger. Like, every centerman can play wing. Give him a couple of weeks. So it is weird that players don't move positions more. Forward and D, that's pretty significant, though.
Yeah, I think now, like, when I coach the kids now, I say you got to learn to play all four positions, just, you know, center, left wing, and defense, just based on the fact that the NHL is a hard place, and you got to get in where you fit in. You got to learn to play everything.
I think eventually we're going to get there. I think eventually we're all evolving towards positionless hockey. May not happen in my generation, but I think that's where this game is all headed.
So won't play.
How are you going to hand out the Norris if there's no top defenseman? We're going to cancel the trophies.
That's we'll have to, and that'll be a sad casualty in the NHL.
R.I.P. Yes. Chuck Norris.
on the conversation of defensemen, is there anything more maddening than a guy saying, "Well, he can't play the left side or he can't play the right side"? Like, you're an NHL defenseman.
No,
you should be able to play both sides.
No, you know why? And here's why. Because I asked that question about, you know, left side D, right side D, do you need left shot playing left side and right side playing? Once upon a time, you could do it as a defenseman, but the way how quick the forecheck is right now, if you're a left side defenseman coming around your net and that extra split second to make that pass, if you're playing right side, is just, it's once upon a time you could get away with it. It's real hard now.
I agree, Jeff, and I know that, like, a lot of NHL coaches totally agree with you. I think more that that guys can be flip-flopped a little bit. I don't think it's quite as dire. I don't know. What's your take on
that?
Still,
you clear that one of us has played.
I think for the forwards, it's just tough to in your own zone. So in the defensive zone, it's very, very tough. Obviously, in the other two zones, it's a little bit easier. But in your own zone, it's very, very tough, and you have to do a lot of video, a lot of prep to, you know, adapt.
Were you comfortable, Justin, playing other side?
No, I was actually not. It's hilarious I say that, but I was also not very good. So,
you know who was the best on playing their off wing? Richard Zednik. He'd always break out, and he'd break out so clean, and he'd go from hash marks and get a scoring chance every time.
Hipster Monday is back, ladies and gentlemen.
Dropping out the hockey hipster names.
All right, let's go quickly here because I love this question, and Jeff shook his head when I asked it in the break. Could the Canadians get anything of significance for Ilya Kovalchuk if they decide to sell? We've got 27 seconds.
Yeah, Montreal's got a good news story. Let's extinguish it fast.
Why not?
You guys handle this one.
Sure. You know, if he plays well for a while, he can grab a fifth for him at the deadline or something.
I said significance, Justin.
Oh, then no.
Maybe he has a no-trade clause. You never know.
On a two-way deal?
Two-way, 700 minimum.
Two-way deal with NMC. No-trade.
Fun story in Montreal. We got to be the rally killer. Writer's Block is next on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.